I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown, with my second show of the week, and then the Flagship Edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Monday, December 11th, 2017 edition of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. As always, I am your host, Robert Vallejos, and I'm joined today by my regular co-host on this endeavor, Zach Haydorn. Zach, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Glad to be here once again. Always am.
All right, that's it. Hopefully I get your name right for the rest of the show. Quick, getting you confused.
All right. Yeah, just Zach.
Here you go, Rick on the mind. All right, well, and as you can tell, we might get things crossed and we might get things confused. We need some help on this show. We need extra voices. That's your cue to call in. The call-in number is 515-605-9345. Now, you got to do a little more than just dial that number. If you want to get on the air and speak to me or Zach, simply press 1 and we'll bring you on. If you want to call him but want to pick your spot to get on, that's fine. You can listen to the show on there, but you do need to press 1 to let me know to bring you on. Of course, that's not the only way to get in contact with us. You can send us an email. Send an email to MMALivecast@gmail.com. That is MMALivecast@gmail.com. And just remember that inbox is always open all week long. You know, even if you don't have a question now, maybe something will pop in your mind throughout the week. Send us an email and we'll read it on this show. All right, we got all the housekeeping and pleasantries out of the way. Let's talk a little MMA. And we had a pretty interesting card this weekend from Fresno with the UFC Fight Night. Cub Swanson ended up going down to Brian Ortega at a guillotine in the second round. This was not necessarily a surprising finish, because I think a lot of people had Ortega pegged to win when we ran our roundtable on the site amongst the contributors. It seemed to be pretty split, but there was a consensus maybe that Ortega had the momentum going in his direction. With that said, I think that guillotine was something that was really impressive and really a highlight reel knockout, showing that Ortega may be the next great specialist in MMA. It seems like it's been a few years since we've had a specialist that people really like. We've had a guy like Damian Maia, who hardcore MMA fans like and jiu-jitsu experts really like, but hasn't really taken off and seemed more like a guy that the UFC wanted to get out of the way of the title picture. And we also what happened when he did get his title shot. It was a very lackluster fight. So with that said, is Brian Ortega the next contender for Max Holloway's title, Zach?
Ah, man, I don't know if he's going to be the very next contender, because I still think Frankie Edgar is going to get the shot that he had. But that said, I think he is probably next in line after Edgar, or if Edgar can't go, I think Ortega is the guy. I think he has more of the, you know, intangibles outside of his, you know, fight work that the UFC can get behind. He seems like a personable guy. He seems like a likable guy, comes off well, talks pretty well. And, you know, he's really good when he steps into the octagon. And I think he opened a lot of eyes by beating Swanson this weekend. So I thought it was a really great weekend for him. And I think the sky's the limit for him, and we could be talking this time next year as him as champion, which is a really interesting possibility to throw that dynamic into that division right now. I think it only does good things for it.
Yeah, he's definitely seems to be a rising star in a division where the champion is a rising star. So I think that's a good situation all around for the UFC. I'm with you, though. I don't think Frankie Edgar should lose that fight. Brian Ortega has a good resume, but it's nothing that screams at you that he has to have a title shot very soon or it will be a great robbery. The only thing that the harm in putting off the title shot is obviously if someone else knocks him off and then you don't have as strong of a contender. You're going to have to do the Frankie Edgar fight, in my opinion, because, quite frankly, you've got to get it out of the way. Frankie Edgar's not going to go anywhere.
Right.
So if he's hanging around and Jose, I understand if Jose Aldo's the champion, then maybe you don't want to do a third fight between them. But if Frankie Edgar's around and doesn't retire, which, I mean, there's no indication that he will, I think that you have to just give him that fight and do it sooner rather than later. I mean, I guess the greatest fear would be if Frankie Edgar won that fight. They probably don't really want him in that top spot. But he is a guy you had headlining at a pay-per-view a little over a month ago before the injury. So everything, I think, is very bright on the Brian Ortega front. Cub Swanson seems to be a bit of a mixed bag. He was fighting out the last fight on his contract, and this really seemed like his last gasp effort to get a title shot. He's a guy that we've talked about in the past that can beat everybody within the division except for the tip-top names in that division. With that said, he's a very exciting fighter, and both he and Dana White, after the fight, have expressed interest in him remaining with the UFC. Do you think that's the right move, Zach?
I do think it's the right move. I really would hate to see him not resign in the UFC. I mean, he's an exciting fighter. He's fun to watch. He can draw some eyes to the product. And, you know, he just seems like a UFC guy through and through. It's unfortunate that he's not been able to really break into that upper echelon and get those title fights. Because if you look at his, you know, resume as a whole, and you just see it outright, you think the guy would have multiple title fights, but he just has not had an opportunity to, or not been able to capitalize on his opportunities when he's gotten them, and that's unfortunate. But that said, you know, just like in any other kind of sports organization, or really any organization at all, there's always, you know, there's tiers of performers, and you need, you know, a second tier like Swanson is on to be accountable and reliable to hold down the fort on different spots. So for that reason, I think he is valuable. And, you know, this is just one fight. You know, you could probably have these two face off multiple times between now and the end of the year, and or you could do the fight over again, and it could go a bunch of different ways. Swanson didn't look bad in this fight at all. There's argument to be made that he was winning this thing before the guillotine got locked in. He looked really good standing up, and so it could have gone either way. It didn't go his way that night. It hasn't gone his way in these premier fights with opportunities, but I still think he's valuable, and I still think him and Dana White and the UFC will work out a deal. So I don't think we've seen the last of him in the UFC.
I certainly hope not. He's a guy I do not want to see in Bellator, just for the reason is he fits that profile of that fighter that comes down from UFC that we think is going to dominate in Bellator and ends up being very pedestrian. He fits that profile exactly of a guy that may be getting older but isn't past his prime, that was pretty good about a year ago, and I don't want to see that happen to him, quite frankly. I mean, just remember, we're only a year removed from that great fight against him and the Korean Superboy at UFC 206. So, and he's a guy that in this role, as a fight night headliner, man, he could be good. And I always use Donald Cerrone as the benchmark. Donald Cerrone's never going to win a title in the UFC, but yet the guy can get booked anytime he wants a fight. And I think that while Swanson probably is a little more prudent with his bookings and what he's going to do, I think he's valuable, and I hope the relationship continues to be mutually valuable for both sides. Let's move on.
What did you think of him in that fight?
I thought he looked like Cub Swanson.
You thought of him in that fight?
Yeah, I thought he looked like Cub Swanson. You know, he was throwing the things, he was taking some shots. It looked like himself. And Brian Ortega is a guy with an amazing chin. For a guy that's an amazing trait to have, for a guy that seems to be solely a grappler, to be able to just take shots like that and not be affected by that. that's a very unique skill set. And I think, you know, you're not going to get a bunch of guys in that division that are going to have hands as heavy as Cub Swanson is. And he still had him. And to your point, I didn't see any slippage in him other than the fact that the jiu-jitsu expert choked him out. And that happens in fights.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I couldn't agree more with that. So, and that's why I don't think he's done. You know, I think he's still, you know, his future is still in that company. So I don't expect him to go down to Bellator. And I couldn't agree more with your thoughts on that. I just don't want to see him make that move. I just don't.
We did have the co-main event. Gabriel Benitez defeated Jason Knight by unanimous decision. Not a lot to see here in terms of the fighting action, but there was some interesting stuff that happened in this fight, including a biting incident. Now, this is something that it does happen occasionally in MMA, but how casual both fighters were made this hilarious, because the guy, you know, he bit him. He admitted he bit him, and the other guy just shook it off. So is biting a good form of offense in the UFC, Zach?
It is not a good form of offense in the UFC. I think, they were very nonchalant about the whole thing. And I think if that would have happened against a different opponent and a different situation, it could have turned bad really, really quick. And so I'm glad it didn't. But no, I don't think biting should be go-to offense for any MMA fighter, not just fighters in the UFC, but certainly not the UFC on one of these cards. So that was really, it was a strange moment. And then like the nonchalance about all of it was also weird. It was just kind of like they were just kind of okay with it, and that was that. So it was very strange.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we see Broken Woken Matt use some of that offense in the very near future. That seems like it's right up his alley.
Yeah, it makes more sense to use that. Yeah, I could definitely see that more of an offense, you know, in a WWE ring than in a UFC octagon. So, yeah.
All right. And then the probably the knockout of the weekend. Some people are calling it the knockout of the year. I think we saw the knockout of the year last weekend. But Marlon Moraes with a knee to the head of Aljamain Sterling, and Sterling was out. I mean, after the point that he's been in the hospital for a couple of days, does appear to be okay now. He's been tweeting, joking that he was actually doing a dab when he was out cold, which if you look at how he was laying, that's exactly the position he was in. Zach, what did you think of the fight overall, and what did you think of the knockout? You know, where do you rank this knockout amongst knockouts you've seen in recent history?
Yeah. I thought the fight was a good fight. It was an entertaining fight, and I really, you know, when I think about it and talk about it, I just immediately go to that knockout. And yeah, I think we saw the knockout of the year last weekend, but man, if that hadn't happened, this would certainly be the take the cake. I was telling you before we went on the air here that, you know, I had to like rewatch it one time, because watching it live, I just, you know, you see the guy just kind of keel over. And I just was like, I was just like, what happened? Why is he just lying on the mat? And then you look back and you see that knee come up and just absolutely wreck him. And it's one of those knockouts, like we talked about last week, where initially you're like, oh my God, that's awesome. That's so entertaining. That's what a crazy fight. And then as the minutes go on, you can't say to yourself, okay, man, that's scary. Hopefully he's okay. You know, hopefully he can come back and then be okay and have this not affect his career and livelihood and life moving forward. And it looks as if we're going that way, but it did get scary there for a minute. But quite the knockout. And if it wasn't for Francis Ngannou, we'd be talking about the knockout of the year, but we aren't, because of last week.
Yeah. And I think it's actually a different type of knockout. The Ngannou knockout is just pure brute force meeting a skull, and we see the result of what happened. This knockout is precision, timing, and technique, hitting the exact right spot and knocking someone out. So it's kind of funny. You wonder when you talk to people outside the MMA world, when they see something like that, they're probably figuring, oh, that's just street brawl stuff. But I've never seen a street fight where one guy can hit a guy so cleanly and so looking so effortlessly and knock him out cold like that. So there is an art form to this stuff, believe it or not. Okay, and then
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was...
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, absolutely. I mean, it was just such a fluid just knee right to the face. It just, it was, it, it was like MMA artistry at its finest, with just such a vicious end.
And I wonder, too, where Marlon Moraes goes from here. It's good to see him get his UFC career on track. When he came into the UFC, obviously he had never lost in the World Series of Fighting, and he's taken a bunch of fights quickly and has fought top-level guys, and he really looked maybe he was out of his element in the beginning, and it seems like he's getting on track. Do you think there's a title shot? I wouldn't say on the next cycle, but, you know, maybe this time next year. Are we talking about a title shot for Marlon Moraes?
Man, you know, this podcast, if you know, he keeps putting up results like that, and I think I want to see a little bit more from him, just a little bit more consistency and a little bit more, you know, performances like that to get me fully on board. But this time next year, I certainly, sitting here today after watching him this weekend, I wouldn't say it's unrealistic or completely ridiculous. I just want to see a little bit more, but I think it certainly could be on the horizon.
I do as well, and this was an exciting knockout, but the rest of his UFC portfolio isn't so super exciting, so I can see there'd be some hesitancy there. But, you know, stuff happens in fighting where things change quickly. What we think we know one week, we have no clue about the next week, so I wouldn't be shocked if any of that right. changes. Real quickly, I'll just run down the rest of the main card. Nothing super notable here. They're all unanimous decisions. Scott Holtzman defeated Daryl Horcher. Eric Anders defeated Marcus Perez, and Benito Lopez defeated Albert Morales in a very entertaining fight. If you go back and watch any of these, that fight, just two bantamweights really going at it. It was similar to last week's fight. It was like, again, a lighter version of last week's fight, the Oliveira Badero's fight, except for these guys just didn't hit as hard, but it was still very, very entertaining. Okay, let's go to our first break, and when we come back, we actually have a couple of callers to get on. We'll get them on. We will get them on. We will preview the upcoming UFC on Fox card, and then we'll talk all the other crazy news in the MMA world.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
And remember, the number to call to get on with me or Zach is 515-605-9345. And remember, please press 1 to get on the air with us to let us know that you want on. Now, these next two callers both did press 1. So first up will be... I believe this is a Skype number.
Yeah, hey guys, it's Valentin from Russia.
Valentin, how's it going, man? Are you getting ready for work?
Yeah, it's 7 a.m. over there.
That blows my mind every time. What do you got for us this week, Valentin?
It's certainly
in Siberia specifically.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
UFC 220 will take place on the same night as the Bellator's big event with Rory McDonald fighting for the title. So how much of a concern it is for Bellator because it may hurt their viewership numbers?
I think this has probably got to be a pretty significant concern for Bellator because UFC 220 is shaping up to be a pretty good-looking card with the Stipe fight added to it. That's earlier in the week, and then you have the Cormier-Ozdemir fight. Those are both two premium fights that people want to see. The Bellator, I think it really just depends on timing. Their events usually end very late. If it ended a little earlier, they could go head-to-head with the prelims for UFC 220, and I think they would do okay. But going head-to-head with what the UFC is offering that weekend, I think is going to be trouble for them. What do you think, Zach?
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think it is. I think it was going to be rough for them before they added the Stipe fight, and now I think it's going to be even worse. I think timing could help them if it falls in a way that has them up against the prelims. But other than that, they are fighting an uphill battle, no doubt about it.
What do you think, Valentin? Do you think it's going to affect them?
I think to some degree, like a couple of weeks ago, they already have the similar situation when Ultimate Fighter Finale and Bellator's card were on the same time. So I have to watch like one I was watching on laptop, another one I was watching on TV. So I just have to watch two at the same time.
Yes, I guess that's the joy of modern technology.
And my second yeah, right. And my second question is, what are your thoughts on Ben Askren's career, and will we ever see him in the UFC?
What do you think, Zach?
I think he's had an incredible career as a whole. I really believe that. And that said, I think there's something to be said for the fact that he hasn't been in the UFC. And I think, you know, it's almost like at this point in time, like a pro wrestler out there, you know, not coming to WWE and trying their hand on the biggest stage. I'm not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I just don't know if he falls into, you know, my one of the greatest of all times, if, you know, you don't come and apply your craft on the biggest stage possible. Kind of like, since this is MMA talk for pro wrestling fans, it's kind of in my head a little bit like, you know, Sting, you know, such a great career, but never really had a true run and a true time on the biggest stage possible. That said, he's an amazing fighter, and I think, you know, he certainly has brought a lot to the sport and has accomplished a lot, but I think it's a little piece of his career is missing without him being in the UFC.
Yeah, and I think it's hard to judge where he would be if he was in the UFC. We talked about this before, that he got, you know, when he came out of Bellator at the same time that guys like Robbie Lawler and Carlos Condit were on top of the welterweight division, we don't know if he would have done so great against those fighters. He's a case where I think two things can be true at the same time. He's done very well for himself. He found a way to monetize his career without being in the big time, which I think is a very special skill to have and something to be admired. At the same time, from a competitive standpoint, it is very clear that he avoided the toughest of competition. I don't necessarily fault him for that, but he, by doing that, I think he gave up his right to claim that he was one of the best welterweights in the world. He may very well be, but there's just no way of knowing it.
Okay, guys, that's all I had for today. I appreciate you taking my call.
Okay, Valentin, we'll hopefully talk to you next week and
have a
great day at work.
Thank you.
Okay, so Valentin drops off, and that opens up another line for you at 515-605-9345. We'll bring on one more caller here. 814, state your name and location.
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Hey, Ryan, what do you got for us today?
First question's on George St. Pierre. Is this the first time in MMA history that a fighter has dropped the title because they didn't feel comfortable fighting at a weight class that they thought they were too heavy for?
I think technically, yes, although you can argue that Jermaine de Randamie did a similar thing earlier in the year, but hers was more avoiding an opponent, so that would be analogous to this. I can't think of one off the bat where the person kind of realized that they weren't cut out for this. Can you think of any, Zach?
No, I was going to bring up the exact same fighter that you just did, and normally it's the other way, and I'm sure we'll touch on this all a little bit more later too, but it just puts into focus just how, you know, an amazing of a whole process this whole saga was with him coming back, and an unfortunate one at that.
Yeah, I don't think anybody has willfully done this. I think some people have been sort of nudged out, or they've been stripped of titles, you know, for inactivity because they couldn't make weight. But that's a really good question, Ryan. I think that's the first time that this has ever happened. What else you got for us, Ryan?
Okay. Second question is on CM Punk. Do you ever see him fighting Mike Jackson, who was the guy that Mickey Gall beat pretty easily because he was talking a lot of trash on CM Punk when he was taking that fight with Mickey Gall, like saying that CM Punk better not fight Mike Jackson because he's more of a stand-up guy. So he's sort of like question the fight, even though he didn't win that fight against Mickey Gall. So I was wondering if we'll ever see that fight in the future.
I think we could see that fight. I don't think the UFC will book that fight, just because now you're really making some big concessions just to get a CM Punk fight. You already brought a guy into the UFC basically to fight CM Punk with, you know, the payoff being that he could be a future star, and that remains to be seen if Mickey Gall will be that. I think the UFC already has looked so bad in this situation with CM Punk that that would even dilute the process even further if they're bringing in the guy, you know, if he's basically fighting the loser and you're bringing in the guy that's at the bottom of the barrel just to give CM Punk a fight. I don't think the UFC would want to do that. I think they're going to give CM Punk another fight. I think things have been brewing in that direction. I know he met with Dana White last weekend. We haven't heard much about what happened with all that, but I believe he will fight again. Do you think the Mike Jackson fight happens, Zach?
I think, like you said, I think it could happen. I don't think it will, because I think it, yeah, like you said, it doubles down on an already kind of failed and dark move that the UFC made to begin with. So, I mean, yes, it could happen, but I don't think that it will. The CM Punk and the UFC thing is interesting moving forward, because it's clear that he, you know, he wants to fight again. I believe he's already training, and he's had that meeting with Dana White about something. We don't know what it is. My guess is that he does fight in some capacity. I agree with you on that. The opponent remains to be seen, but it's certainly, at least for me, I don't think he'll have as much of a buzz as the first go-around did. This seems to me more like a move to kind of appease CM Punk a little bit than it is to really feature him and draw a ton of new eyes to the product.
Ryan, what do you think? Do you think CM Punk gets another fight in the UFC?
I'm not sure about that. It might be more likely that he fights in Bellator or one of these smaller leagues rather than UFC.
Yeah, I think one of those smaller leagues would love to have him, and they would do big business with him.
Yeah.
What else you got for us, Ryan?
My final question is more of like a Bellator question. Do you think the door is closed for the Green Power Ranger to have a fight in Bellator, or do you think he's gotten too old to do one of those freak shit fights that they like to do?
Yeah, I love that the Green Ranger grew up and became an MMA fighter, and that he has a beef with CM Punk, and, like, you know, he goes around signing autographs as the Green Ranger, but also fights on the side. So, selfishly, I'm kind of a fan of, as like just a kid who grew up on Power Rangers, I am a fan of the Green Ranger still being a thing in my life. I don't think Bellator will sign him. I know Bellator likes to do those weird fights, but they like to get people that are more on the come down than complete unknowns. And I say that with full knowledge that they, you know, they've put Kimbo Slice and Ken Shamrock in 2015 in a fight. They've dug up Hoist Gracie. They've done all these weird things. I think maybe the Green Ranger might be where they draw the line, but I wouldn't put it past Scott Coker, but I don't think it's going to happen. What do you think, Zach?
I don't think it's going to happen either. As much as I grew up on the Power Rangers, and it's crazy to see the Green Ranger, you know, actually fighting real people instead of those weird dummy guys. But I just don't – that's a little too circus sideshow freak thing for me, and I don't even think Bellator would dip their toe into that. That's just my opinion. If he's pining and politicking his way into that, I think he's barking up the correct tree. So I think he's got the best chance with Bellator, but I still don't think that is going to come to fruition. So no Green Ranger in the MMA world anytime soon.
Agreed. Ryan, thanks for calling. Call us back next week.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
All right, and Ryan dropped off. That opens up another line for you, 515-605-9345. Don't forget, you can always email the show at MMALivecast@gmail.com. That's MMALivecast@gmail.com. Okay, Zach, Let's quickly look ahead to the fight card this weekend. UFC on Fox, this is always their return from college football card that they like to do, and it's usually a pretty good card, and they have a pretty good card booked this weekend. It's headlined by a welterweight showdown between Robert Lawler and Rafael Dos Anjos. This is an interesting fight. Lawler, after losing the title to Tyron Woodley at UFC 201, had basically disappeared for a year till he came back and had a fairly impressive performance against Donald Cerrone, even though some may even believe that the decision was a little swayed. Regardless, he still looked like Robbie Lawler. Rafael Dos Anjos has had a similar but more active path in the last year. He had the fight with Conor McGregor, fell out, basically lost his moment, lost to Eddie Alvarez, lost the title eliminator to Tony Ferguson, but then has come to welterweight and has looked pretty phenomenal at welterweight. And this should be a fight that the winner really would have a good claim at Woodley's title in the very near future. Who do you think takes this, Zach?
I'm going with Dos Anjos for this fight. You kind of harped on it already, but I think he's looked just tremendous at welterweight. He really he seems in control. He seems like he's really able to execute his game plan. He looks comfortable at that weight, and he kind of has some of the swagger back that I think he lost kind of after the McGregor and Alvarez saga of his career happened. I think he kind of has some of that swagger, some of that confidence back, and that can do a lot for a fighter. I don't dislike Robbie Lawler here. I certainly wouldn't pick Dos Anjos and put myself on a hill to die on with it, but I do just like his comfort level. I like his confidence, and he's really proved that he can be effective at that weight, and I think he's going to be successful this weekend.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Most people get into the Conor McGregor orbit, and they're much worse after they come out of it. It seems like their careers and their lives are never quite the same after interacting with McGregor. This was not the case with RDA. He's looked great at welterweight, and I think this is really a statement for him. And he would have it's crowded at the top, but thinning out, and he would have a fairly decent claim at getting a shot at Woodley. And it's a fight I don't know if they would want to book necessarily, but he definitely could plant his flag and lay his claim. All right, in the co-main event, we got Ricardo Lamas taking on Josh Emmett. I'm going to go with Lamas in that. Lamas is kind of in that featherweight mix. I have a feeling the result of this fight will determine somewhat where we go in featherweight. It's probably the case that I would say the winner of this fight might get Brian Ortega if Frankie Edgar does get the next shot. What say you, Zach?
Yeah, I agree. I think Lamas is definitely going to win here, and that's a great notion to put him up against Ortega if Edgar's first in line to get the title shot. In this fight, I just think, you know, I think you're looking at a tier of two different fighters, I think. He's just so much better, more polished, and it's kind of in a different league. So I think he kind of walks away. I'm going unanimous decision on this one, and think we could be talking about him in the title picture 6 months from now if he kicks it up.
Agreed. And in the welterweight match, we have Santiago Ponzinibbio taking on Platinum Mike Perry. This should be a very fun fight. I do wonder, though, like, so does the winner of this fight get Darren Till? Is that how you see it, Zach? Is that the big prize at the end of this?
I think so. I think so. And that's part of the reason why I have Ponzinibbio as my pick, because I really want to see that fight. I think that's a really, really good fight. That said, I think this weekend to mess up against Perry is going to be, I think it's going to be kind of a war. I think you're looking, could be looking at the fight of the night in that fight. But I'm going with Ponzinibbio to walk out victorious.
Yeah, it's a case where you feel like the UFC kind of wants to get behind Mike Perry, but they know there's some huge pitfalls that are involved in that. So they're probably wanting Ponzinibbio to stop the Mike Perry train, because eventually they'll have to start giving Mike Perry legitimate contenders. But I'm going to take Ponzinibbio as well. It was too weird how focused he is on Darren Till when that's not his opponent coming up. That's unnatural in the fight game.
It is, and I almost wonder, I hope he's not looking past this one, because he really is like shockingly focused on somebody else when he's got a fight coming up 6 days from or 5 days from now, whatever it is. So, that's the fight I want to see. So I hope it can come to fruition if he can pull it off, and I think he will.
Yeah, and I don't think long-term logical thinking is something Mike Perry is ever going to be accused of. So I think we're good there. Okay, and in the main card opener, Glover Teixeira takes on Misha Cirkunov. Pretty good fight in the light heavyweight division. That's a division kind of similar to heavyweight. You're always usually like one or two wins and a John Jones arrest from being the title pitcher. I'm going to go with Cirkunov in that one. Before Cirkunov lost recently to Uzdemir, who is the number one contender now. I mean, the hype was really on him, and it seemed like he was going to be the guy that was going to take the place that Ozdemir has, and that he hit that road bump. I think he gets back on track here. I think Teixeira really hasn't been the same since UFC 202 when he was at the end of the heavy hands of Rumble Johnson. So I'm going to go Cirkunov. Who do you got, Zach?
Yeah, I'm going Cirkunov too for the same reason. I think, you know, Teixeira hasn't shown me anything since 202 that has really made me think that he's capable of winning this fight. I mean, a phantom punch here or there certainly could get the job done, but overall, I think he's a little bit overmatched. This fight's kind of interesting because both guys are coming off losses, and, you know, like you said, you're one of two fights away from the title picture, so a win for Cirkunov here could really get him on a fast track to a title fight, depending on how the 220 co-main event goes. So while on paper this is kind of a sluggish fight to me, the outcome certainly could have some effects on what happens in that division in the beginning to middle part of 2018.
Yeah, this is definitely a low-profile fight that could have some very big implications. Let's take another break, and then we have some pretty significant MMA news. We'll talk about George St. Pierre vacating the title and what the heck is going on with Conor McGregor and all these boxing rumors. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Yes, we implore you, please visit MMATorch.com. A lot of hard work being done to keep that site going and keep it relevant and regular postings. We had a really good article go up on Friday regarding the TKO event that ran Friday night on UFC Fight Pass. We had an in-depth primer done on it where we had interviews with multiple fighters, and that's not something that I saw a lot of other MMA websites even giving two cents about. We had that very in-depth cover, so there's some very unique coverage of there. Dylan Boyker was the man that penned that piece, and it was a very good piece. So even that, now that the event has passed, I would certainly encourage you to check it out. Okay, Zach, we had probably the biggest bomb dropped in the last couple months in MMA this past week when it came out that George St. Pierre is suffering from ulcerative colitis and is vacating his newly won middleweight championship less than a month after winning it from Michael Bisping. What's your overall impressions of this entire saga? And then we'll break it down into smaller things. What do you think overall? How do you feel about this?
I overall, you know, without going in depth, which I think you need to do on something like this, but overall, it's just the whole thing is disappointing to me because it kind of just casts dark negative shadow over the return of this UFC legend in George St. Pierre. It just seems like, you know, he came back to fight, you know, for a title just because he wanted to fight for it, got put in line. And even though he swore that he wouldn't just win it and vacate it, you know, that's what ended up happening. And the thing is, you know, analysts and fans thought that it could go down that exact way. And the fact that it did go down in that way after we were told time and time again that it wouldn't, it just paints the whole comeback and that whole card in a different light to me overall, big picture.
Yeah, it's funny because nobody in the world, up to and including Dana White from some of the comments he's made, is surprised by what happened. It seems like everybody thought that – I don't know if anybody thought that he would vacate it this soon, but nobody thought he was going to be facing Robert Whittaker and taking on other middleweights. And even on fight night, he very much seemed to downplay the fact that he was the new middleweight champion. With that said, it was still kind of shocking because – we have been married to this whole idea of Bisping GSP for over a year now. It was last fall where, you know, we started hearing about this and how mm-hmm. ridiculous this all sounded. And that's when we were first getting into this new era of the money fight. So we thought that maybe it might not happen, but this has been going on forever. And what a fitting way for all of this to end, you know, with a fight that probably in the long run doesn't mean a lot. With that said, I will give both parties credit that they didn't hold the division hostage over this. They acted quickly. This wasn't a Conor McGregor situation where everything's in limbo, or, you know, for that matter, it wasn't a Michael Bisping situation where everything was in limbo. They got the wheels moving quickly, and they should be commended for that, but at the same time, the UFC put everybody in this position. I don't necessarily blame Bisping or GSP. They were offered this very lucrative fight, and they stuck to their guns until they got it, and they got paid for it. So I'm not really blaming them. The UFC just kind of took a big gamble, and it has been sort of the story this year where anytime they feel like they have a little bit of momentum, that momentum is crushed by something happened very shortly after an interesting main event. There was a lot of criticism hurled GSP's way, several members of the MMA media and fans, you know, saying that, you know, he owes us better, or we deserve more, or he should not have done this. What's your feelings on GSP specifically in this situation?
GSP specifically, I don't really fault that guy at all, honestly. I mean, look, like if like you said, they were offered that fight and it's one of the biggest paydays on the table for them, like why wouldn't you take it? Why wouldn't you accept something like that? So in that regard, I don't really fault GSP really at all. I think, you know, like the purity of like, oh, respecting the sport and respecting the title and all that stuff. You know, look, these guys are professionals. Sure, they're in it to compete and they're in it to win titles, but they're also in it to make money. It's their job. So I don't fault him at all. I do fault the UFC though. I mean, they did not, I don't think they handled this very well. I really, really, you know, had discussions with a lot of people about how I just couldn't fathom a scenario in which Dana White and the UFC didn't protect themselves at least a little bit to try to get one more fight out of GSP at middleweight. I figured that was a kind of a layup stipulation, and in contract negotiations, if I'm him, it would have been one that I just wouldn't have caved on. Like, if you're going to come back and you're going to do this, and you're going to get that payday, well, okay, you're staying there for at least another fight. But clearly it didn't go that way. And I think the whole thing just kind of blew up. It got to a point where UFC was a little bit not in control with it. And this is the outcome. So it's unfortunate, but I definitely put the fault on the UFC and not on the shoulders of GSP and Bisping. They're doing what's right by them, and this is the fight game, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Will we see GSP ever again in the octagon?
Oh, man. I think, yes, we will. I think we will. Obviously, I don't think it'll be at middleweight, but I think, you know, after all this, I think people still want to see him fight. I think he still obviously is a draw for the company, provided that he's healthy. I don't see why he wouldn't want to come back. He dominated Bisping and won the title, and there's nothing to say he couldn't do that at a different weight class that he's more comfortable in. So I'm going to go, if this was fast or fiction, I would say fact on that. I think he will be back in some fashion. I kind of think he might be the kind of a go-to super fight guy for Dana White at this point in time. You know, just put him up against, you know, another top draw and put him out there and draw a bunch of numbers. I don't know if he's going to be a guy that's going to start running through divisions at this point in his career.
No, I don't either. But I also think that Conor McGregor fight is still out there and it's still something that could feasibly happen.
Oh yeah.
And I don't get the feeling that GSP is the guy that until he is completely retired, he's never going to fully fall out of shape. Now, he will require a full training camp and all that goes along with that, because his preparedness is kind of what makes him GSP. But he's not a guy that's just going to be sitting on the couch really fat and, you know, is going to need years and years to get ready. So I do agree with you. I think he might serve the role that I think they thought they were going to get Brock Lesnar to serve before everything went down. I think that's kind of the role that GSP will be serving. Okay, let's move on from this situation with GSP. Let's move on to something even crazier. So this past week, Manny Pacquiao has claimed that he is in negotiations with Conor McGregor to have a boxing fight. Now, ever since the McGregor-Mayweather went down, there has been some rumblings that, you know, Pacquiao-McGregor could be something that happened next. On this show, we advocated for Paulie Malignaggi versus McGregor over Pacquiao-McGregor. Dana White has given his two cents by saying that it would be tampering if they were negotiating with him. Bob Arum and Dana White have no loss of love for each other. And Dana White claims he would sue Manny Pacquiao for doing this. And if you believe that, what do they say about oceanfront property in Arizona? Give me a break. Do you think this fight's happening?
I don't think this fight's happening. We talked about it a few weeks ago, and I still maintain the same thing, that I don't think it's happening. I don't think Conor McGregor in a boxing match before he steps into the octagon is happening at this point. There was, you know, the stars aligned perfectly for Mayweather and McGregor to have the mega fight that they did. And as we all know, it was more of a, you know, marketing show than anything else. It was entertaining. It was fun. I enjoyed it. But that's not something that you can apply to McGregor and any other boxer, even any other top boxer. It was just, to me, Mayweather and McGregor was just one of those once in a lifetime moments that can't necessarily be replicated all the time. And I think that's what they'd be doing here, is trying to replicate the pseudo magic of that with a lesser opponent, not in terms of skill necessarily, but just in terms of marketability and entertainment in Manny Pacquiao. So no, I don't think the fight's going to happen. And I hope that it doesn't, because I don't think the result will be any different. I think Conor McGregor kind of, you know, if he has that fight, we're probably looking at a similar outcome. And I think the more he kind of puts himself in those positions, you know, eventually his star will start dropping a little bit. I think he needs to get back in the octagon. He needs to defend that title and go from there. The one issue I will say with this is that I think at some point Dana White and the UFC are going to have to figure out a creative way in how to pay Conor McGregor, because, you know, fighting in the boxing fight, you have more access to more money. And for that reason, I think UFC is going to have to find a way to get creative and really pay McGregor what he deserves at this point, like the boxing world can. That said, I believe they will do that. And he'll be seen in the octagon before he's seen another boxing fight.
Well, I probably disagree with almost everything you just said, except for that last point, that it comes down to compensation and the fact that even if the fight doesn't gross what Mayweather-McGregor gross, it's a bigger payday than anything McGregor could possibly get within the UFC. And I think that's what is keeping all this, you know, solvent. It makes no sense. I mean, the first fight made no sense. This really, really, really makes no sense. We already proved the thesis that a championship-level boxer is better than a guy that's never boxed. I don't know why we had to do all this to prove that thesis, but that is still the case. With that said, there hasn't been enough people outside of Dana White saying, no, this is not going to happen, for me to believe that this actually isn't going to happen. I actually think this will happen. The tone that Dana is taking is a similar tone that he took, you know, around the time UFC 205, before I think he realized that he's going to lose his biggest star if he doesn't cooperate with that, with this. I know there's bad blood between Bob Arum and Dana White, but you know what? Dana White had some really, really bad blood with the Showtime executives and with, you know, Steven Espinosa and those guys, and they were as chummy as can be, counting their millions in with Mayweather McGregor. So I think money can be the great deodorant when it comes to working things out. And we don't know exactly what the status of McGregor as a boxer is, if he might have the freedom to do this. You know, is he protected now by the Ali Act? We don't know exactly, you know, where he can go as a boxer. So there's a ton of unanswered questions. But, of course, we can't talk about Conor McGregor without talking about his forever arch nemesis, Nate Diaz, sending out a tweet earlier this week implying that he's kind of done with MMA, that the power brokers aren't treating him correctly, and he may be joining the boxing ring. He had the boxing glove emojis going on. The Nevada Athletic Commission has hinted they would, surprise, surprise, they would license him. I mean, of course they would. But what do you think? Does Nate Diaz have a future as a boxer? If so, who is he going to fight?
I shake my head at all this because I don't think he necessarily does. I don't know what the demand is to see Nate Diaz box. You know, I mean, like he's not Conor McGregor in the MMA world where people are like, oh man, it's going to be great to see the greatest MMA fighter right now against the greatest boxer right now. I mean, McGregor had a lot of things on his side for his transition into boxing, pay-per-view numbers, title victories, et cetera, et cetera. And Nate doesn't have that outside of Conor McGregor. So for that reason, I don't see him being put on a pedestal like McGregor was in the boxing world. And I think the results would go, you know, even worse. I like you said, you can't, we've already seen what happened when you take a championship boxer and put him in against a championship MMA fighter who's never had a pro boxing fight. So we know how that's going to go. I think you can apply that same formula to Nate Diaz. If the guy wants to box, can he box? Sure. Absolutely. You can go and have a boxing fight somewhere and it'll be interesting to see how that goes. But I don't see him having this pseudo mega fight on pay-per-view in front of millions and millions of people like McGregor did, and which is what I'm sure he's hoping for when he throws rumors out there like that.
Well, I think that he's a better boxer than Conor McGregor, but he's still an MMA fighter by trade. So I agree with you that he probably wouldn't fare well against any top level boxer. If he does get into boxing, I think his opponent would be Conor McGregor. And I think that's not a outlandish proposition if you really think about it. That's the one area, and I've written about how I think that the UFC and Dana White should stay as far away from promoting boxing as possible. The one area, though, where I think they would actually be pretty successful if they would promote a boxing fight between two of their own guys. And I think McGregor Diaz in a boxing ring, logistically, I don't know how you would do it. I would almost want you to do like the WrestleMania 2 setup where you'd have multiple events. So on pay-per-view, you'd buy an event that was basically an MMA pay-per-view, and they would like switch to like Australia where Diaz and McGregor were in the boxing ring. I know Holly Holm has said she has no interest in returning to boxing, but I think they could book Holm Cyborg in a boxing fight, and that would do very well. So that's the one area where I think all this could work out. But this is just hilarious how this will not die, the whole boxing and MMA crossover. And I find it funny, and to the theme of this show, that the UFC guys and the UFC diehards and the MMA faithful spent so long trying to disassociate their sport from pro wrestling because they thought that it would bring down the image of their sport and the credibility of their sport. But yet, boxing comes in for like 1 year and everything is completely turned upside down. And I think that's just a perfect commentary for everything that is going on right now in the UFC.
It totally is. And it's just, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, man, if you're Dana White right now and you're looking at like all the, you know, quote unquote buzz surrounding some of your fighters having boxing matches, there's, you know, I'm sure he didn't think about it too much because he made oodles and oodles of money off Mayweather and McGregor, but he's got to be looking and saying to himself, man, maybe I set the bad precedent with this, because he knew that, you know, his fighters can get more money boxing. And I really do believe, like as I said before, that they got to find a way to try to creatively pay some of these guys, or else they're not going to have Conor McGregor fighting for them.
Very much agreed. Okay, let's take another break. And on the other side, let's play a fun round of Fact or Fiction.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
And we're back on the livecast MMA talk for pro wrestling fans. There's still time to call into the show. We have a couple of segments left. That number to call is 515-605-9345. Just please remember to press the 1 on your keypad to let us get you on the air, to let us know you want to get on the air. You can also email the show at MMALivecast@gmail.com. That is MMALivecast@gmail.com. That inbox is open all week long. All right, Zach, this is my favorite part of the week. Let's play some Fact or Fiction. As always, I will read the statement, and Zach will say if my statement is fact or fiction. First one, UFC 220 will be a pay-per-view success for the UFC.
I'm going with fact on that. I thought it was going to be on the path to success before they announced the Stipe and Ngannou fight. And I think now that they have announced Stipe against Ngannou, it creates a whole bunch of buzz. I think they're doing the right thing. I wrote this my take piece for MMATorch.com last week. You can check it out there. But I wrote that, you know, it's smart to attach the Rocket to Ngannou as fast as they did. He's really not banged up at all. He had a highlight reel knockout that made its waves all around social media. He put himself in a different class. And now they get to feature him in a title fight for the heavyweight championship. Stars don't always align like that for the UFC. They did here, and I think it's going to be successful because of it.
I'm going to say this is going to be fact. It'll be successful, but it'll be moderately successful. I think what we've come to expect as successful, that benchmark has changed. But with that said, I think they're going to do just fine on pay-per-view, and they're going to be really satisfied with what they did. This UFC 220, it has two interesting storylines. Daniel Cormier seems like he's a different level of star after he finally came out looking good in the whole Jon Jones saga. He finally came across as the sympathetic figure that he probably always should have been. So I'm curious to see how much that star power translates to pay-per-view buys. And then, like, we might have a heavyweight star on our hands no matter who wins in that title fight, because you'll have either Stipe, who has the most title defenses ever in that division, and somebody who, you know, historically we can really start looking at as a top level heavyweight, or we can have the next guy who gets these highlight reel knockouts in Ngannou. So I'm very much looking forward to that, and that could really be a turning point pay-per-view for them. Okay, next question, next fact or fiction. That the UFC will regret clearing Mark Hunt for competition. Fact or fiction?
I'm going to say fiction on this one. It's almost like because they cleared him, I don't think they have regret or any kind of feelings whatsoever about this guy. I mean, not that they openly want anything bad to happen to him, but the fact that he got kind of cleared after their little spat and after, you know, Hunt said what he did about, you know, his health, it's just, you know, it seems to me that if the UFC's doctors can clear him, they're gonna go with him, and they're not gonna look back. So for better or for worse, I don't think they will regret clearing him, regardless of whether or not something happens. God forbid something does, but I just don't think they believe I don't think they think that way when they book these guys to fight. Michael Bisping is another example. I don't think they're gonna regret it at all.
I'm actually going to go with fact on this, and I think it's going to be something that's probably going to bite him in 10 or 15 years whenever that class action lawsuit type of thing makes their way towards them. And what a clear indication of a guy who basically self-reported that he was suffering from CTE and that they cleared. I think that can really have some serious ramifications down the line. I hope it doesn't, though. It's truly in my heart, because I don't want something terrible to happen to Mark Hunt, so I should throw that out as a disclaimer. Okay, let's see here. Anderson Silva will be vindicated in his USADA appeal. Fact or fiction?
I'm going to say fiction on this. I like you in the first one. I hope he is. I really think that would make me personally think more of him in an astute fashion if he does get vindicated. But look, you know, at this point, I don't think it's going to happen. And I think that's, you know, that this test fail is going to be part of his career that he's going to have to deal with moving forward. So no, I don't think he will be.
I'm going with fiction here as well. USADA is not perfect. We saw it with the Tim Means case that there can be false positives. But for a guy that before USADA had a failed drug test and is a clear product and a top guy during a time where we know there was a ton of PED use, he gets very little benefit of the doubt in my book. So I do not think he will be vindicated with his appeal. Okay, let's move on to something that's half pro wrestling, half MMA. Ronda Rousey's imminent WWE appearance will sit well amongst hardcore wrestling fans, meaning the kind of fans that listen to podcasts like this and subscribe to everything on the Torch and go on Reddit and all that good IWC stuff. Will they be loving Ronda Rousey when she's in the WWE in 2018?
No, I'm going to say fiction on that. I think initially there's going to be some excitement there. She's a big star. She's been rumored to be, you know, making her way to WWE for a long time. But I think the hardcore people are going to see through her push a little bit. You know, they're going to see her come in and bounce people like Charlotte and Sasha and Bayley, maybe even Asuka, kind of out of the way in favor of her. And I think the hardcore fans are going to, they're going to turn on that, and they're going to turn on her, and she's going to be in that position of being positioned as a babyface and then having that hardcore fan base turn on her and react to her as a heel. So initially, yes, I think they'll kind of pop for her appearance, but then as she gets further entrenched into the week to week and the month to month storylines, I think that fad's going to turn, and those hardcore fans are going to bring out the boo birds when she's out there.
I'm going to say fact as well. And I went back and forth to some of the other co-hosts a couple of months ago when this started percolating. She fits the profile of everything that hardcore fan base detests about wrestling. She's an outsider that's going to come in and go over other people. She's someone that is a big right. celebrity who has kind of become a pariah in her own sport. So, you know, if there's any crossover between that hardcore MMA fan base, they already have a negative impression of her. And she's going to bring along a lot of other people with her, including Shayna Baszler, who is deserving probably of being within the company, who's also going to get this residual heat of somebody that only has their spot because of who they
yep.
do. Put on top of that, Stephanie McMahon is going to attach herself to whatever it is, you know, of bringing Ronda Rousey in. So that's going to be another strike against her amongst the hardcore fan base. I think she has like literally everything in the world working against her. Not to mention, I don't think she's as good of a promo as people might think. Yes, she was a decent smack talker in MMA, but it's a totally different ballgame. The two don't necessarily translate.
Yeah.
There's a difference between promos and just talking smack. I mean, people think they are the same thing, and they really are not. And in that environment, I think everything's going to work against her. With that said, if I'm WWE, I am not hesitating one bit to put her on WrestleMania and to get her, you know, as the face of a lot of my products. But they don't care what that hardcore fan base thinks anyway, so I don't think they should lose any sleep over it. But I do think it's going to be a point of contention, something that I don't think a lot of us saw coming, but that's definitely going to be at the forefront in 2018. Okay, and the last one. Week one of Woken/Broken Matt was a success. Fact or fiction?
I'm going with fact on that. Absolutely, fact 100%. I really think they kind of rolled him out in a way that, you know, it protected him. It was on kind of on video. He's on the screen back and forth with Bray Wyatt. He was able to do his stick. It didn't look like incredibly overproduced. It didn't look incredibly forced. So I thought initially right out of the gate, I was like, okay, they keep going on this path, I think he's going to be successful. And I think that the hardcore fan base that we just talked about that fell in love with Broken Matt so much outside of the WWE is going to accept this Woken Matt version of him inside WWE. So I thought they dipped their toe into that water really, really well. I thought it was effective, and I thought they laid a good foundation for him to go from here, whether it's in Bray Wyatt next, which it appears it's going to be, and then as he moves on from there. But I was happy with it. I was actually excited about it, and I think that most people who are fans of Broken Matt and now Woken Matt were happy about this too. So all good for me.
Yeah, as far as we're just judging it on 1 week, they hit that thing out of the park. They got me to care about Bray Wyatt, which is something that I haven't done in about 3 years. Right. I have no idea what the future of it's going to be. I know Todd Martin kind of implied, well, it's an outside creation that is much more well-received than their native creation of Bray Wyatt, so that might not, you know, spell good for the future. That may be so, but from what we've seen so far, you know, I definitely think thumbs up, and you've seen on Twitter that there's interviews with Rebbie Hardy, and I think they're going to do it. They're going to do a serviceable job. I don't know if it's going to be everything we want it to be, but they're definitely putting effort into this.
Yeah, I guess initially it's like they didn't completely butcher it right out of the gate, which, knowing the WWE, sometimes, you know, they do. And because they didn't do that, I think they for 1 week, they kind of held off the negative forces, and you can say, okay, all right, they got something.
All right, let's take our last break of the evening. And when we come back, we'll do some more WWE talk, and we'll preview this upcoming weekend's Clash of Champions.
Rich Fan, formerly of the Primetime Friday Laughcast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here, because Saturday nights on the live cast are officially all right for diving.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend go listen to the Deep Dive with Rich Fan. There are some fun topics that you would never even think you wanted to discuss. About a couple of months ago, they were making comparisons between backup and starting quarterbacks in the NFL and how that relates to scenarios of passing the torch in pro wrestling. I was just absolutely gripped by that. So that's definitely a show I would recommend to take out to listen to, even if you're not a fan of current events podcasts. There's some pretty good evergreen content in there to listen to. All right. Let's take a look at this weekend's Clash of Champions. Kind of feels like a throwaway pay-per-view. Feels like a way they need to have a pay-per-view before the Royal Rumble. And so they're throwing out this SmackDown card that has a lot of retreads and multi-man matches. But the card itself is shaping out to be pretty decent. And the episodes of SmackDown have been pretty decent. It is coming to us from Boston, so it should be a very hot crowd. Sasha Banks isn't even there to lose a match, so I don't know who they're going to have lose in their hometown. At the top, we got the championship match for the singles title, AJ Styles versus Jinder Mahal. Before we pick that match, Zach, it was Triple H beating Jinder in India the Triple H-iest thing ever?
Oh my gosh. Man, if you would have told me, like, hey, can Triple H do anything more Triple H-ist than winning the Survivor Series match like he did, I would have said absolutely not. And then, sure enough, wake up on Sunday morning and hear the news that he went over Jinder Mahal clean. It absolutely is the most Triple H-iest thing you could do. You build this guy up for months and months to be your kind of entry point into the India market, and then you get over there, you already take the title off him, and you get over there, and then he's grabbing the Triple H, the retired guy. It makes no sense. I wasn't on board for the Jinder push to begin with, but they did it. They went for it. They put their money and time behind him, and it was maddening and eye rolling to see them, you know, put Triple H over in that fashion. I disagreed with it wholeheartedly, I don't get it. It makes no sense.
No, and it's kind of insulting, especially if you didn't like what would happen with Jinder Mahal, because it's almost like, well, what the heck was this all for? That's what we suffered through about 6 months for. I understand having to take the title off of him because,
right.
I mean, SmackDown was just dreadful with him as the champion, but you know, you still want to get something out of it, and it just went full on the other direction. I mean, I like Burial Triple H just from an ironic standpoint, because I know every time he wins a match, the internet loses its collective minds. But yeah, I felt like I was part of the club and just being, what the heck? I thought that was a misprint. That was ridiculous. All right. On Sunday, AJ Styles taking on Jinder Mahal. AJ retain here?
He does. I think, you know, look, the Jinder thing, it certainly didn't work here. And, you know, maybe it would have worked if they didn't have an AJ Styles on the show, a guy that was just so obviously the guy and the guy that the brand and the show should be built around, but they did. And AJ should have been the champion coming out of WrestleMania and throughout this year. You know, he should have been the guy. He is now. I think the WWE has corrected that mistake, and I think they're going to stick with him here and for the foreseeable future, especially in the build to WrestleMania. So I think Jinder's going to go on to other things. I think he's going to still be a featured heel in the United States Championship level, but I think this is going to be the end for him, at least for a while, in the WWE title picture.
Yeah, I got the feeling this is the way to clear him out of the WrestleMania plans so that he doesn't have to be a major player during that whole season. And then I kind of think they'll heat him up a little bit after that, but on a much diminished level. Okay,
yeah.
So then we got the United States Championship match, a triple threat match for no good reason. We have Baron Corbin defending against Bobby Roode and Dolph Ziggler. I've got Baron Corbin retaining here. I wouldn't shock me if Bobby Roode got the title, but I just don't think that's going to happen. I think Ziggler's put in there to take the fall. What say you, Zach?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Ziggler is put in there to take the fall, and I agree. I think Baron Corbin's going to walk out the champion. You know, he's a guy that I think has Vince's attention, has the WWE's attention. He looks good with the belt, and I think Bobby Roode could really, he could use the United States title run, but since Corbin pretty much just got the belt, I don't think it really makes sense to take it off him at this point. And with Ziggler's involvement in the match, neither one of those guys have to take a fall, and they could have a rematch of sorts either at the Royal Rumble or even the main event, the SmackDown show. So definitely see Ziggler taking a pin here, and both Corbin and Roode looking good coming out, but Corbin walking out with that belt when the show's over.
Okay, and then for the women's title, we have Charlotte and Natalya for what feels like the 100th time this year that they have faced each other. They do generally have good matches, and this will be a lumberjack match. You've got the new Riot Squad out there. It actually probably should be fun if they give them time. Lumberjack matches are kind of weird because you never really look forward to them, but they can occasionally create interesting moments. I think Charlotte retains here. I think she's probably going to keep that title through WrestleMania. I don't even know if she'd get the title match at WrestleMania, because you got the feeling she'll be opposite of whatever Ronda Rousey is doing. But I'm going to take Charlotte here. What do you think, Zach?
Yeah, I'm doing the same thing. I'm taking Charlotte here. They wrestled so many times, her and Natalya. I think the lumberjack stipulation, you know, makes the match a little more unpredictable. It's kind of got that, you know, that train wreck feel to it, at least going in, where it's like, all right, I think we're not going to see a technical masterpiece here, but more of a car wreck featuring really the entire SmackDown women's roster. And I don't want to go outright and predict this, but I think it's worth noting that Carmella still has that money in the bank, and with all those lumberjacks out there and the Riot Squad, could be in a situation where we're seeing Charlotte kind of win the match, get decimated at the end by the Riot Squad or by the Lumberjacks, and have Carmella sort her way in there. and take that belt. Not predicted, but just something to think about.
Yeah, that's not a bad prediction. I didn't even think about that. And the way we're picking it, we're not picking any title changes. And there's usually a title change on every pay-per-view, even if it's just for one night. So that's actually not a bad pick. I hadn't even thought about that Carmella with the briefcase is probably the best way to free Charlotte up for the horsewomen brawl. So I think that's a very good and astute observation that you made there. Okay, and then we got the tag team.
Well, thank you.
that's your one. I didn't know your name earlier in the show, so now I figured I better pay you a compliment at the end of the show.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, so we got the Fatal 4-Way for the SmackDown Tag Team Championship. Let's see if the tag champions can steal the show again like they seem to do every pay-per-view for about the last 6 months. You got the champion Usos defending against the New Day. Chad Gable, Shelton Benjamin, and Rusev and Aiden English. I think they're calling themselves Rusev Day, actually, at this point, but Wikipedia just has them listed as Rusev and Aiden English. I have no idea who to pick here, so I'm just going to go with the Usos, but I could see any one of these teams winning the title here. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm going with the Usos, too. It's a throwaway match a little bit, just not that it won't be good, but just because there's so many teams involved that really are only recently heated up for this opportunity. You know, Team Rusev, they got the win over the New Day last week, but they've kind of been positioned as beatable guys and pseudo jobbers for a long time. Same thing with Benjamin Gable. They had like a heel turn that nobody even really saw. And they're just kind of thrown together. So I think it's more of a match just to have a match in the tag division. I don't think it's going to factor in to any sort of major storyline development. So for that reason, Usos are going to maintain those belts.
And the final match that they have advertised so far, which has really been the focus of SmackDown, we have Randy Orton teaming with his BFF Shinsuke Nakamura taking on the team of Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, with Shane McMahon as the special guest referee, and if Owens and Zayn loses, they get relegated to TNA, I'm guessing. So, I'm going to take... I don't know who I'm going to take. I guess Owens and Zayn, because I think we get a Daniel Bryan heel face turn in this match, and it'll be, you know, something to that extent where Shane takes a bump or something and Bryan has to come in and affect. I have no idea what's going to happen here. I'm intrigued in general by the storyline. I just have no idea what's going to happen in this match. With that said, though, I kind of think they're looking to heat up Shinsuke Nakamura for his match with AJ at WrestleMania. So I'm going to pick Owens and Zayn, but I can flip-flop on this a whole bunch of times. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. Like the match is really intriguing because it has so much going on within it. You have the Nakamura stuff. He's gonna, in my head, I agree with that. I think he's gonna be heated up for some kind of showdown with AJ Styles in the near future. And at the flip side, you're right. The whole show, the last month, has been this Kevin Owens, Shane McMahon, Sami Zayn, and now with this Daniel Bryan story all kind of weaving itself together, and now it's all hitting us in this match. So there's a lot going on, and I almost feel like it's so overbooked that you forget that the logical conclusion is like, hey, is Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens really gonna go away for a foreseeable time? I just don't see that happening. So from just the outside of the storyline look at it, I think somehow Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens are going to go over here. How that happens, I have to buy a vowel on that one. I really don't know how they're going to shake it out. I'm sure it's going to involve some sort of involvement from Daniel Bryan, like you said. I can't believe they'd even attempt to turn that guy heel at this point. I think if they do seriously try to do that within the confines of this match, it's going to backfire in a big way. But it's a lot of intriguing stuff. Maybe we'll get some more stuff to digest within that match after this week's SmackDown. But right now, looking at it, I'm picking Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, if for no other reason than just I just can't see them, even storyline-wise, leaving the show at all. So I'm going with them.
Yeah, there's so much going on there. Real quickly, one last throw-in topic. What do you make of all the buzz about Daniel Bryan, not only wrestling again, but now it seems to be that there's little murmurs in corners of the internet that maybe he might get cleared by the WWE. This seems to have some weird parallels with the Mark Hunt situation we talked about in UFC. Do you think I think we agree that he's going to wrestle again at some point in his life. Do you think he's wrestling in the WWE again?
You know, man, if you would have asked me a year ago, I would have said absolutely not. But, you know, I think he's in a situation where it's almost like the WWE can't, in a strange way, they can't afford him to not wrestle. It's like they know that if his contract ends and he's going to go somewhere else and he's going to wrestle. And I think they know that he's going to bring a lot of eyes with him. And I don't think they want that. I don't think they would ever admit that to themselves or admit that to the public, but I really don't think they want that. I think if Daniel Bryan is going to wrestle, they want it to be with them. And on the flip side, you know, thinking about it from Daniel Bryan's point of view, if he's going to wrestle, he might as well wrestle in the company that can make him the most money, where he can have merchandise sales go crazy and get the merch checks. And it's just, you know, if he's going to wrestle from a personal standpoint, it makes sense to do it in the WWE as well. And I just think those lines are coming closer and closer together as his contract gets closer and closer to being up for renewal. And, you know, I think it's going to get pushed over the edge. So, I'm 50-50 on it now, whereas last year at this time I was 100% the other direction.
Yeah, I still don't think it's going to happen. If you have to really ask me if – I don't see a world where they can clear him. I just don't see with everything that they have on the line and what they've already declared about him. Unless it almost has to be like a medical breakthrough to see that something was misdiagnosed in the past, which I don't think they would admit that one of their doctors so severely misdiagnosed something. So I don't think it's going to happen. However, I'm not on the 50-50. I'd probably be, if I was 100% sure, now I'm 99% sure. With that said, this is also an era where they cleared Kurt Angle to wrestle. I thought never in a million years, an era where Edge had to retire and they made Daniel Bryan retire, that Kurt Angle would wrestle a match and take bumps again. So anything, I guess, is possible. But it's definitely – I think that is probably the top story to watch coming up in 2018 in all of WWE, is how exactly everything with him plays out, whether he leaves, he stays and wrestles, they give him some great retirement package, they sign him to a Bret Hart deal where he's a permanent ambassador. You know, it really has a ton of tentacles, and it's funny that this throwaway pay-per-view seems to be the first indicator of whatever is going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And that adds another layer to it, is that, you know, he's more involved in this storyline than he really has been in any storyline since he's come back. And I think that there's something to be said for that. And you might be right. It could just be WWE just appeasing him and giving him a little bit more to sink his teeth into. But at the same time, maybe there is something more to it. But yeah, absolutely. 100% the story to watch going into 2018, because, you know, even then you look at what the Bullet Club is doing and trying to fill an independent show with 10,000 people, like, Daniel Bryan could be an avenue to do that if he's open.
And we'll close on that note. Zach, you have a ton of stuff going up on all the Torch platforms. Why don't you inform people of where they can read your stuff and where they can find you on social media?
Absolutely. Appreciate that. You guys can follow me on Twitter at ZHeydorn. That's at ZHeydorn. 99.9% of stuff there is pro wrestling and MMA related. You can catch my weekly column at MMAtorch.com. Usually drops sometime on Thursday, and also can check out there the news and hot topics on a day-to-day basis in our News Digest column. And on the pro wrestling side of things, I am the quote-unquote beat guy for 205 Live. So all 205 Live TV reports, you can read my analysis and a full report of the show if you missed it on the pwtorch.com after 205 Live.
And you can find me on Twitter at Rob M. Vallejos. That's RobMVallejos. It's mostly pro wrestling and MMA, but you may get some like 80s metal thrown in there every now and then for random reasons. And follow all the brands. Follow at MMA Torch on Twitter. That's our, the main Twitter account for the brand. Please go to MMA Torch, PW Torch, and PW Podcasts. Also PW Torch Livecast. I'm getting very clumsy with these plugs at the end of the show. I think it's time to get out of here. Oh, wait, before we go, one last thing. If you're on Twitter, find fellow co-host Sean Ennis. Send him your condolences. No, nothing. I don't think it's bad in his personal life, but the Carson Wentz injury has seemingly brought the man down. So if you have any empathy in your heart, send a friendly message to our buddy Sean. And that'll do it for this week. So for Zach, I am Robert. We will talk to you next week. Take care, guys.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject. And it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Killer Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the SE Editor format of the Weight Killer Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in-depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip. This is life.